Alrighty, people, what's going on? Welcome back to the next episode of the Red Pill Initiation Hour, here with your host, Chris Story. Now, for all the returning listeners, guys, you know the gig by now. You know there's some shit that we gotta cover before we can kick today's episode off. And seeing that none of you have got back to me if you want me to even discuss this, then hey, I've gotta cover it. So first things first is a massive thank you to everyone for your continuous love and support on letting me know what you think of the podcast. Again, guys, your words truly do mean the world to me. Any little feedback is critical for me to be able to improve the podcast. I want to make it as enjoyable and as beneficial for you as possible. So if you can please leave me a review on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. If you're listening to this on Spotify, then if you can jump over to Instagram afterwards and hit me up at Primal Alchemy UK, let me know what you think. If you think it's good, be like, dude, really enjoyed this one. Found the information, really intriguing. Or you could be like, mate, that podcast was shit. Don't interview a guest like that again. Get your shit together. And yeah, I'll take it on board. Every little helps, guys. And in return, I always drop you an exclusive discount code for primalalchemy.co.uk. So if you use the code REDPILL, that's the code REDPILL, you'll get 10% off anything within your shopping basket when at primalalchemy.co.uk. So if you're in the market for a protein powder, then we've got you hooked up. Check out our flagship product. That's Vitruvian Protein, the world's only organic whey protein superfood blend with adaptogenic herbs, nootropic herbs, prebiotics, a range of high vibrational superfoods formulated into one powder, and it's the only product on the market to be certified organic, keto, and paleo accredited. So yeah, check it out. If you're not on the market for protein powders, then guys, check out our Ancestral Potential coaching programs. That's when you get the chance to work one-to-one with moi. We've got our Demigod Fitness programs, our Quantum Fuel Nutrition. We've got our Enlightened Biohacking Tutoring. Sounds pretty cool, right? Yeah, so check it out. Primalalchemy.co.uk. Use the code REDPILL. Also, guys, got another treat for you coming up on this episode. I've got an exclusive discount code from my boy Josh's company, APE Nutrition. APE Nutrition create the UK's only organic ketogenic protein bar. And I've told you this on a few episodes now that this bar is fucking legit. You know me by now, guys. I am very, very nitpicky when it comes to nutrition. And I will not eat anything that doesn't align with my protocols. And Josh's APE Nutrition Keto Fuel Bar does everything and more of what I'm looking for. Truly, guys, it's fucking delicious. One of the best protein bars that I've ever had. And it just so happens to be ketogenic. Fuels you on your ketogenic pursuit. So I couldn't ask for anything more. So if you use the code PRIMALAPE, that will get you 10% off at checkout at apenutrition.co.uk. All right, so moving on to today's episode, guys. We've got Dr. Emily Splickle. Emily is a podiatrist and a human movement specialist, founder of Evidence-Based Fitness Academy out in New York City, I believe. And she is a really unique mind within the field of health and fitness. The barefoot community has been growing rapidly over the past few years. I remember studying it at university, where we were looking at the effects of the biomechanics of running barefoot compared to running in a trainer. If you don't know what that means, for you guys in America, it's a sneaker, but we call it trainers over here. And looking at the biomechanical loads associated with the two variations of running. Very interesting. There's a lot of merit to barefoot training, one that I am a massive fan of. I incorporated into my own training. Get yourself outside, get yourself grounded on the earth, out in the sun, barefoot. And yeah, do some functional exercise. Get the proprioception Buzzing. Get it. Recalibrate it. That's what we need to do, guys. And Dr. Splickle is one of those great minds that can really break it down for you in layman terms of how important it is for us to really start to think about how we look at our feet. How important our feet are in our life, for our overall health, and for a lot of other esoteric purposes that we may be unaware of. So yeah, we covered pretty much everything that you can cover when it comes to the feet, to your skin, to your proprioceptive ability to be able to navigate and maneuver in the world, in this matrix. And just overall, it was just a really good chat. Really enjoyed Emily's company on this one, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. So again, please drop me some feedback afterwards if you do enjoy it. If you don't, drop me some feedback. Either way, just drop me some feedback, guys. Please, please. Need it for you. Anyway, I'm going to stop begging and kick this shit off. So that's it, guys. Get ready. Morpheus. Tell these fools what's up.
You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
As above, so below. What lies without resides within. Time for growth to begin. Mental, physical, and spiritual. We find balance with all three as we focus on totality. The whole, not the half. This is for those on a spiritual path. Looking for the clues to the answers of life. But the truth ain't always nice, so leave your ego at the door. Let your inner lion roar and your spirit soar. As we go deep down to the molecular level, tap into the body with some yogic breath. Throw in some calisthenics for a true strength test. Like the shamans of old, we use the nature to heal. With a little bit of DMT to reveal. This whole life journey is a little surreal. And your mind needs a leader, not a follower in life. Let your mind be the master and you pay a hefty price. This next 60 minutes is about self mastery. It's not an easy path and it's a lifelong journey, but we up to empower with this red pill initiation hour. With this red pill initiation hour, brought to you by Primer Open Me.
The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Three, two, one, and sweet Zeus. Guys, we're back. It's episode 34 of the Red Pill Initiation Hour. 34, guys. We're starting to pick up quite the momentum now with these podcasts. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed the ride so far. Got a real special guest on, as per usual, this episode. Really going to start to connect the dots more with grounding ourselves back into the body. We've gone a little bit esoteric in the past few episodes. We've been looking at a little bit of spirituality, a little bit of hermeticism. So I think it's time to bring this back to the temple itself, our body, and really get some professional insights on how to optimize us. And this is something that's going to be overlooked by most. And for some reason, it seems to be a subject that people just have discomfort with talking about. I don't know if it's the way we've been programmed, if it's the way that we've been conditioned growing up, but yeah, today's episode's going to be about feet. And I know for most people, that's a bit of a gross subject. They're like, oh, fuck. No one likes feet for some reason. But you're going to find out today that how important it is, not in just in terms of our health, our performance, but just creating a holistic image of what the human body is about. So yeah, the guest today, I've been a fan of her work for a long time and reached out to her, got her on, and yeah, it's time to drop some knowledge. So today's guest is Dr. Emily Splickle. Got that one right, Emily, didn't I? Splickle, not Splickle. Yeah, didn't fuck that one up. All right, cool. So yeah, Emily, welcome to the Red Pill Initiation Hour. It's great to have you on. And yeah, I just really happy to get you on. There's such a controversial stance, it seems, in training with bare feet. Like, there's some people that are for it, some people are against it, and yeah, I just wanted to get the lowdown off the old somatic sensei herself.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. And I will definitely add that feet are fascinating. I know a lot of people find them a little gross down there. Don't touch, don't look, hide them in your shoes. But hopefully, some of the stuff that we talk about, people will have a new appreciation for feet and really find how powerful they are.
Yeah, for sure. So, Emily, for everyone who's not familiar with you so far, I mean, it would be great if you could just give us a introduction about who you are, maybe where you've come from, your own sort of journey and path to how you become Dr. Emily Spickle. And yeah, we're really branch off from there and see where this conversation takes us.
Sure. So I am a functional podiatrist, not a typical podiatrist. Functional podiatrist from New York City. I'm also a human movement specialist. I take a very deep appreciation for human movement and how integrated the body is. Of course, starting from the feet, because I'm a podiatrist. I was trained as a surgeon. So podiatrists in the US are different than really almost every other country in the world, that we are trained more parallel to an orthopedic surgeon. We are taught with the philosophy on really surgical intervention using a blade, which conflicted with my philosophy in life and movement and longevity. So I did surgery for 5 years, pulled away from surgery, and now do functional medicine, regenerative medicine, holistic integrative medicine, if you want to call it that, seeing patients in New York City. And then in addition to that, is I do education. So I travel all around the world. I've been to 40 countries speaking about barefoot science, barefoot movement, feet as the gateway into the nervous system. I've written several books and contributed to several textbooks, and just really trying to change the way that the world, say in general, has an attitude towards feet. And with it being based on solid research, solid evidence that it's not, I'm not pulling this stuff out of my ass, just making stuff up, that there's actually some science behind what I'm saying, trying to combine it as a doctor, but also a movement specialist. And having been in movement, fitness, sports since I was six, I was a competitive gymnast for 13 years, which is a barefoot sport. So I have an appreciation for feet and power. Fascia tension, just what it means to harness the power of the human body just from your own body weight, which I'm really glad now looking back that I did gymnastics because it changes my philosophy on how I look at performance.
Yeah, interesting. And it's just to give you a little bit of a background of how I kind of got interested in the barefoot sort of training world as well was, so I used to work on a cruise ship as a personal trainer, and as personal trainers do, I don't know why I got roped into this, but I had to sell foot in insoles. So and although I didn't like it at the time, like having to sell people, like, yeah, the insoles for the shoe, it was they were quite high tech insoles, so I had to learn a lot about the feet in order to be able to sell it. And it really opened my eyes to how important the feet are in this whole equation of total health and performance. And I had a yeah, you learn, I mean, kind of like a basic level compared to what you're at, but just learning about all the different arches in the feet, and then if they begin to collapse, then how that sort of creates a chain reaction through the body in terms of muscular imbalances, and yeah, a lot of the issues that we seem to have when it comes to, be it back issues or musculoskeletal issues, it can really be traced back down to the feet, and I find that pretty fascinating. And at the time, I was still kind of like one of those that was like, ooh, I just want to put my shoes on. Not gonna walk around barefoot here. And because of that, for such a long time, I've just had these weak ass feet. Like I just, even now, like I do a lot of training in order to strengthen them, but I've still got these bitch ass feet. Whereas if I go into like do like a cold plunge in like a lake or a little reservoir somewhere, and I stand on like the rock pebbles and the stones at a wrong angle, I'm like, ah, fuck, shit. And you see some people that just walk through it like it's nothing. Like it's not even in like even registering in their mind. And you get some people that have got such weak feet due to them being kind of like bubble wrapped and mummy cuddled their whole life in these cushions that we wrap around our feet in daily, that it really does have such a significant effect. And I think first off, if you could just give us like a rundown of like what are feet? Like, that's quite a weird question to ask, but I think it's one that maybe people really don't understand what the function of the foot is, and then we can really start to branch off from there.
Yeah, so I want to hopefully take this in a different perspective than people might think that I would. So we can look at the foot from a mechanical perspective, which is kind of what you were explaining, orthotics, insoles, arches, low arch, high arch, different foot types. That would be biomechanical. That's where you could say, okay, if you're pronating or you collapse inward, you typically have knees that come in and then your back starts to get stressed. Maybe your glutes don't engage as much. So you're connecting joints and joint movement with biomechanics. That's a way to look at the foot, which is a powerful way, is probably the most mainstream way to look at the foot. However, you can also look at the foot from a sensory perspective, from a fascial perspective, from a proprioceptive perspective, energy, tons of kind of down that rabbit hole. And that's where my fascination is how the foot is a sensory gateway and a fascial structure that ties into the core of the human body. Now, when you look at it biomechanically, first way, more mainstream way, that's where you typically say, okay, when you have a flat foot or your foot collapses in, maybe the listeners have heard of pronation, that's where we think of arch support, knee stress, hip stress, low back stress. And then the opposite side is if you have a really high arch, then, which is supination, the other extreme, then your foot is more rigid. You might want more cushion in your shoes, right? So that's kind of a mainstream way of looking at the foot. Totally true. I address those with patients all day, all the time. However, sensory, now we can start thinking of the skin in the bottom of the foot. And when you stimulate the skin in the bottom of the foot, especially specifically through what it is sensitive to, not just, oh, walk on pebbles, which you could do 100%. You could just be barefoot and do barefoot movement. But the skin in the bottom of the foot is sensitive to very specific stimulation. The most common one is vibration, or the most prevalent one is vibration. So your feet, the skin in your feet, are sensitive to vibration. And we encounter vibration with every step that we take. So every time your foot hits the ground, you experience impact forces, but impact forces are perceived by the feet as vibration. So you need to be able to feel vibration. Vibration, everything is vibration. I'm sure you've had some experts come on and they spoke about every cell in your body is vibrating. You know, sound is vibration. Vibration, energy is vibration. Everything literally in the human body of communication through the cells is vibration. That's also how our body on a bigger scale through our feet communicates with the ground during dynamic movement, is it feels vibration. So you put cushion in your shoes, lots of cushion, thinking standard running shoes, and you have now disconnected your feet and your nervous system from the stimulation of dynamic movement, because the shoe absorbs the vibration, not your body. And then you can start to see a huge cascade of events that happen once you start taking vibration away from the nervous system and through the feet.
And I've heard you say before, so you've got the vibration, and then there was texture was another one. And the other one was something to do with the stretch of the skin?
Skin stretch. So those are the three main stimulation that comes through the feet.
And what would, how would you explain the other ones in terms of, just breaking down the other factors?
Yes. So two-point discrimination is what the most superficial nerve in our feet, that means it's the closest to the surface. Two-point discrimination, best analogy is Braille. So people know what Braille is. Look at an ATM. It's on every ATM. You can see the two different points. They're a certain distance from each other. They're a certain height. It is essentially stimulating the same nerve in the feet, same nerve in the finger as in the feet that we use to differentiate textures being smooth versus rough. It's actually a two-point discrimination sense. Now, if a surface is rough, because of the 2 points or, you know, whatever it is, let's say it's turf or sandpaper or something like that, there's different ways you can stimulate texture. You now adhere to the surface. And when you adhere to the surface, now you get skin stretch. So the skin stretch and the texture element essentially work together. Best analogy of how you could stimulate those is if you think of when you walk on ice, right? When you walk on ice, there's not a friction that's keeping the foot down. So your power, your ability to, you know, actually walk fast on ice goes down because you don't have a force or a friction going into the ground. Athletes, as the best example, have to have a very strong force going into the ground, either through their cleats is usually what they're doing. So they're using like an artificial support system to do that. Or you can use it through the stimulation of the skin on the feet and through the muscles of the toes. So your toes pulling down into the ground creates a force going down, so you can create more power going forward or up.
Interesting. And so if you were to combine your training and hit all three of those variables, so you're focusing on the vibration, the vibrational feedback, the texture feedback, and the skin stretch feedback, what would be the ideal training environment for to really optimize that, I guess, like that haptic feedback?
Yeah, so let's say if you want to be in shoes, I'm totally doing a selfless plug here because I invented insoles that are textured. I have invented insoles that have a 2-point discrimination on them. The company is called Nervoso Technology, and we are the only 2-point discrimination textured insole that's on the market because of how I understand feet, and I know exactly what you're asking for. How do we create that environment to stimulate these nerves in the feet? So if you have a textured insole, and let's say it's in a minimal shoe, so it's in a Vivo barefoot or Zero shoes, any of the brands that you might like that don't have cushion. So the cushion has to go away so that you can feel the vibration during dynamic movement. Vibration, check. Textured insole without socks, I must add. So you want to go in the shoe without socks just so you get as much stimulation as possible. So now we have 2 of the 3 that is stimulated. Now you're doing dynamic movement. Let's say you're doing, I don't know, lateral movements or box jumps, you're running, whatever the athletic movement is that you're doing. Because you have the textured insole, which creates a rough texture or a rough surface for the feet, now the skin is adhering to the insole or the surface and you get skin stretch. So now you have all three in that environment. That would be the ideal situation. If you train without shoes, so now you're doing barefoot training, you also want to carry that over into an environment that you would get that stimulation. 2-point discrimination is very hard to find, which is why we created mats. Again, total selfless plug, but to find that stimulation is really hard. A lot of people will train on AstroTurf thinking that they're getting the texture. The thing with turf is that the underlay under turf is actually really soft. So when you're trying to get maximum foot stimulation from like a timing perspective, everything about the foot is about timing. Turf creates almost a too soft of an environment, which means you're slowing the foot down. Training on like a hardwood floor, right? So think like some groupette studios, dance studios, you know, some older buildings that have the old wood floors that flex a little bit. Those actually stimulate the feet and the nervous system the fastest. They're smooth though. So now we take away one of the stimulation, right? Yeah. So it's kind of hard to combine all. I would say the best way or the easiest way would be, again, with the textured insole in a minimal shoe, and you're on a surface that is creating vibration. You don't want to go in your minimal shoes and then be doing dynamic movement on a wrestling mat. I mean, that doesn't make sense. You just took away all the vibration that you need.
Interesting. Can you go in a little bit more detail on what the actual mechanics are of, our ability to be able to register these vibrations? Is it to do with the, is it like exteroceptive? Is that right? Did I say that right? Exteroceptive,
yeah, is a broad category of
yeah. Theirs. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, there's good. Okay. And that's what's kind of picking up the message, I guess, between the floor and our foot. And also, I've heard you say before that there's like two types of skin, as in like the ones that we have on the palm and the base of our foot compared to the rest of the body. If that's correct, then they interact with the environment differently.
Yep. So two types of skin, the palm of your hands and the bottom of your feet have different skin than everywhere else on the body. So thinking of, you know, your just above your ankle is considered hairy skin. It might not have hair, but it's hairy skin, right? So the skin is different. It has hair follicles. It has a different type of sweat gland. It has melanocytes, so you can tan, or that's where you get different skin colors or skin tones. That is based around hairy skin. And then the skin that's on the palms of the hand and bottom of the feet is called glabrous skin. Just a different type of skin. It's thicker, doesn't have melanocytes, doesn't have hair follicles, has different sweat glands. So the characteristics are different. It also has different nerves. The nerve that you mentioned, exteroceptors, is a big category. And then under that, there's what's called mechanoceptors, which are mechanically stimulated. Yeah, that is on the hands and the feet. There's four, and I don't want to lose the listeners, but there's four main ones. One of them is 2-point. Second one is skin stretch. And then the last two is vibration. So low frequency vibration, high frequency vibration. The vibration stimulates those mechanoceptors, and then it is carried all the way through the brainstem into the midbrain, thalamus, into the neocortex, where we have what's called a somatosensory cortex, and that essentially shapes the way that you control movement. Sensory in, motor out. The better the motor out, the better the sensory in has to be, right? You bring in garbage, you put out garbage. Super simple. Or you bring in, when I teach, I give like an analogy. Like I have all the pieces to the puzzle. And when you wear shoes with cushion, or you kind of pull away some of the information that the brain actually needs to control movement, it's almost like I'm giving you not all the puzzle pieces. Now you try and figure it out. Like that's not how you're supposed to train the body. You're supposed to train the body to win, not let me have you be on an Eric's pad with your eyes shut and thick cushion shoes and then figure it out, nervous system. If you're really trying to create correct neuromuscular patterning, you have to give the information, especially prehab, post-injury, so a rehab, post-surgical, or if someone has a neurological condition, they had a stroke, they have MS, they have neuropathy, they had a joint replacement, they sprained their ankle. You have to give the nervous system what it needs. Otherwise, like it just doesn't make sense. You have to train the body to win. And that's one of my slight frustrations with trainers, is they'd like to try to be super creative, and it's oftentimes it's just the simplest basic exercises. Stick to the simple stuff. It works. Give the body what you need to win versus coming up with random balance devices to try to throw the body off when it doesn't do anything to real world, real world results, right? If you train on a BOSU, does that actually accelerate the rate at which your ankle stabilizes when you're about to sprain your ankle stepping off a curb? No, not at all. There's no research supporting it. So instead, the way that I would rather throw someone's balance off is have them on a stable surface, barefoot. Maybe they're standing on one leg. We'll throw that in. And then I'm going to challenge their brain. I'm going to have them do dual tasking. So while they're balancing, I'm going to have them say the alphabet backwards. I'm going to have them count backwards from 100 in multiples of 7. I'm going to see how I'm trying to stimulate the brain in a different way. Perturbations is a way, but perturb somebody, which just means shift their balance in a reactive way, but on a stable surface, right? You can do eye movement exercises. You can, you know, do tracking. You can do different things like that that throw the balance off, but keep you actually grounded in the way that you actually control balance, which is through a grounded foot. If you're a surfer, go do the other stuff because that transfers to your sport, right? Which is surfing, unstable surface. Most people walking on the street, which is where 90% of ankle sprains are happening for real world, they're just walking around and the boop, they fall in a hole and they, right, or they step off the curb wrong. Sorry, all your BOSU training and wobbleboard training didn't train you to protect your ankle when you stepped off the curb wrong and now you have a fractured ankle.
That's fascinating. I'm going to give that a try of doing that sort of the multitasking to do with like, yeah, the barefoot balance and then doing some form of like mental activity to, yeah, that's what sort of results have you seen from your clients that you've sort of initiated that with?
Yeah. So most of who I see is more, I work with athletes, but more on a consulting basis. So when I'm, whatever the professional sport is or team, I'm then teaching that technique to their athletic trainers and to their strength coaches where they are seeing a higher efficacy. When I'm seeing a patient or an individual, it's usually more rehabilitative or chronic neurological. And then you are seeing much better gains or a higher transfer to just the day-to-day walking, right? Performance is a category. But the majority of people is just the simple act of daily walking. They need to be able to coordinate that. When we walk, we don't realize that we're actually doing what's called dual tasking. So we're coordinating the stabilization of movement, subconscious movement. Walking is subconscious, right? You don't think about it. You just get up and walk across the room. So that subconscious pattern is happening while you are making a decision to go around someone else who's walking towards you on the sidewalk while thinking about your taxes and you're texting someone at the same time. Like there's that, all of that's called dual tasking, is coordinating the subconscious stabilization of movement with higher brain processing and decision-making. That's where you see most of the injuries happen when you can't do that. A great example that I'll give that ties to performance is athletes in the U.S. is primarily American football, where concussions are huge. So an athlete who gets a concussion and then the way that they screen them to come back and say that they're ready to return to play, return to sport, is through, they'll do balance exercises, right? How's your motor coordination? But they're not necessarily testing for dual tasking. So that athlete, from a balance perspective, just statically may pass that test. Athlete returns to sport. Now they're training, and they're making very fast decisions while doing dynamic movement, and their injury rate or their reconcussion rate is very high because their ability to coordinate both is compromised. That's one of the highest subsequent results of a concussion is the ability to dual task. So dual tasking post-concussion, post-stroke, post-any TBI is must be paramount in the training. But I think that's for everyone. Everyone should do dual tasking.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to give that a try. That's fascinating. Like I do some pretty unorthodox training, and the way that I train people as well within the past has always been kind of a few pages away from the norm. I do a lot of like barefoot kettlebell training with like the steel mace, a lot, yeah, like your traditional sort of what you would see now, like Instagram functional training, that sort of shit, and I find it really beneficial. But being like barefoot with it is a completely different level. You feel the movements a lot more. It affects you differently. Like you feel like different muscles are activated when you're doing so, your balance as well. And it's surprising how just being barefoot can totally shift your ability to move through space, move through space time. It's Yeah, it's. I think it's so undervalued and underappreciated. What's your opinion on, like, why do you think it is that we have such a obscure, gross outlook on feet? Like, what's your opinion? Like, where did this stem from? Like, where is the collective consciousness as a whole when it comes to this? And is it something that's natural, or is it something that's just been over years and years and years of kind of keeping the feet covered up? Is that just created some form of like psyche block?
Yeah, no, I think it is a cultural, it's definitely cultural, and just from, you know, trends within society of, you know, you're supposed to be in shoes, you know, even babies, you put shoes on and they're not even walking, which I just don't get. But certain cultures that are less cover the feet, hide the feet, you know, kind of that aspect, have a different relationship to feet or barefoot. Best example is any Asian culture. You go into their homes and they immediately take their shoes off, right? Shoes are left at the door and everyone walks around the home barefoot. I was just in Tokyo recently, and when they go into any restaurant, they leave the shoes out and then they're at the table barefoot. So that's less of a stigma around it, whereas other cultures find that the foot is the bottom of the foot. You never show your the bottom of your foot, right? So there's kind of different cultural responses to the feet. Some are very open to it. Some are very open to barefoot. Some don't show the bottom of the foot, but the looking at the foot or touching the foot is fine, but you can't touch things with the foot. Like you couldn't touch, in Hindu culture, you're not supposed to touch, like point to something with your foot, because that's disrespectful, right? You're needing to respect whatever item it is, right? So you appreciate that. I feel like in a lot of Western ones, because we are so, I don't know, almost like buttoned up, nudity and sexuality and like naked foot, I don't know, it just kind of, everything becomes like cover it and hide it in a way. And then when you expose it, it creates a different response to it. It's weird. When I went through podiatry school, even at that, a lot of people had like, okay, I'm becoming a podiatrist, which is like the bottom of the totem pole medical specialty, because you're dealing with the feet. Like that's like, who the fuck wants to deal with feet, right? Because they're gross. They're hidden in shoes all the time. They smell. They like, versus when I get around people who are fascinated by feet, movement specialists, reflexologists, and they're just like, oh my God. And I'm like, you have more energy and passion towards feet than every podiatrist that I went to school with. Almost every podiatrist is like, I'm a podiatrist. Like, seriously, you should be proud of what you do. I'm proud because I connect feet to movement. So I'm not like, oh yeah, I deal with feet. No, I deal with movement. That's what my specialty is. And your feet are the gateway to movement because it's the only thing that's touching the ground. So it's just that attitude that I think really has to change. You can see on Instagram, there's like many people that are obsessionally like into feet, not foot fetish. There's definitely a lot on Instagram too. I'm not going that way. But people who are into like natural movement, primal movement, feet as like free the feet, release the feet, get into natural shoes. Like there's a huge following on social media that are into the natural function of the foot. Those are, you know, my people. Those are the people that take my certification and, you know, go to my lectures when I'm at a conference. But that, even if that's, say, a million people around the world who are on these social medias into it, not that many people compared to how many people are in the world who have a different perspective on it. The mainstream is, especially in Westernized cultures, is no, we need supportive shoes. We need arch support. We need the insert. We need the cushion. We need the, they still have that misconception. So we are very far.
Where does that stem from? Like who was it that first come up with the need to have these big cushions on the bottom of our feet Like, who was, do you know who, anything about the history of that?
Yes, of course. Yes. So 1970s running boom, right? That's when athletic footwear started coming out. Before that, before the running boom, a lot of like basketball used to be played in Converse. Converse is now what people do as like a minimal shoe to lift in. Like a lot of people will go to the gym and lift in Converse, right? So there's not a lot of support in it. It's total flat bottom. There's really not cushion. To me, it's a very narrow shoe. So that's not good about it, but people used to play basketball in cons. And then the 1970s running boom, they started seeing 70 to 80% of runners getting injured, which is the same statistic today. So then Nike changed the running shoe and they put a heel toe drop into the running shoe and cushion. And the purpose of adding cushion and the drop was to offload the Achilles tendon, because a lot of these runners were getting Achilles tendonitis. And then the cushion supposedly absorbed the impact forces, because impact force is bad. So you need the cushion to absorb the impact so you don't get stress fractures and plantar fasciitis and all of that. Not thinking that cushion absorbs the vibration, which is the stimulus to stimulate the muscles to contract and absorb impact. So it was kind of like just led into a cascade. And then people started thinking, oh, in order for me to be comfortable, cushion equals comfort, which does not. Cushion does not equal comfort. You can be just as comfortable. I'm actually more comfortable barefoot. How more minimal do you get than being barefoot, right? Mm-hmm. And then, or in most minimal shoes, I'm more comfortable in a minimal shoe than in a cushion shoe. Like it's, you know, but a lot of that misconception is the footwear industries. And footwear industries and these big players, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, any of them. I mean, that's a billion dollar industry is footwear. They're product companies. They want to sell you product, not for the better well-being of society and human movement. They're a product company. They're a business. Money.
Yeah, and it's pretty frustrating, because when I was at university, I was at a specific institution where they had, because I did the exercise physiology, and the institution I was at had a partnership with Nike, well, obviously partnership with Nike and Under Armour. And you've got like these quote unquote world leading researchers into biomechanics that are the teams that are doing the research on these shoes, and they're coming out with all of this data suggesting how good it is for you and how good it is for your foot health wearing this shit. Like, obviously, like you said, money is a heavy player within this whole within how the research is displayed. But why is it still going on? Like, it's evident that there's been no progression made since the 70s in terms of injury prevention from wearing these shoes, wearing these trainers, sneakers in the States. Why is it? Is it literally just because money's just coming in, it keeps rolling in, so why change it? Or are there legit people that think that it's better for you to be wearing these sort of shoes?
I would say the reason that these companies keep making the cushion in the shoes and all of that is because people buy it.
Yeah.
So if people are buying it, they're going to keep doing it. Now, there is the offshoot footwear category that is minimal. Nike makes a minimal category. New Balance makes a minimal category. So they have it, and it's still a large revenue maker within their whole business model. But is it the biggest part of their business model? Probably not, right? So they still have to appeal to all the other categories or sports or individuals, customers that would buy their shoes. The other thing that I've learned, I actually was a consultant for the Nike Innovation Kitchen, and I worked with them for quite a few years, that I would meet with them and talk about barefoot movement and natural movement. This is when 2012, 13, 14, like, so it was a little bit more still towards the peak of the minimal shoe industry, and they were still putting a lot of innovation in the minimal category. Now I feel like Nike was kind of like, we don't need the minimal. Now it's kind of going into carbon fiber and other stuff like that. But Nike, as just an example of the companies, it's a fashion company as well, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a footwear company, but a lot of people wore Nike Free and any of the Nike Free models, they used to wear it with like their suits in New York. Like you would see people would buy the shoe, not because of function, not because of the minimal, but because it's attractive. So they like the shoe. So towards the end, when I would be working with Nike and they would show me some of their latest models, to me, it was like they were showing me like a car, like the exterior of a car. Like they just kept looking at it from an artistic aesthetic perspective. And it just became a big moral conflict, I guess. Moral conflict as far as like my beliefs, and then working with a company that still is just seeing it as the art, the artistic, how can I just keep doing this from design, exterior, where it's just like, fuck the exterior, just put the raw bone structure into it. I know it's not exciting, and you want the person to keep buying shoes. So instead of having one Nike, no, I want everyone to have like five or seven pairs of Nike. The way that you're going to do that is they all look different so they can wear it with different outfits. It's still fashion, right? Unfortunately, a lot of that is the reality. And that's why people will still continue to wear high heels despite all the stuff. I mean, if I'm going out to an event, I have an event tomorrow night with my husband for his company, I'm wearing high heels because I have a dress and I want to have, right? It's just, as part of reality as well, is shoes and fashion will always forever be this kind of dynamic. Footwear will always have a trend that comes in. Do you remember Uggs? I don't know if that was our big one.
They are, sadly.
Crocs. Do you remember the Croc trend? Oh,
they're definitely just as big over here.
The fitness shoes, so Fit Flop and the rocker bottom shoes, trend, right? Skechers for a while was a trend. Everyone wearing Converse, trend. Tom's Footwear, trend. Like, because it's fashion, so it kind of comes in and goes out. Footwear is still this element of how you express yourself. It's a representation of yourself, right?
Yeah.
So you are fighting that at the same time as trying to keep optimal foot function and the minimal category and no cushion and no heel drop shoes and, you know, all of that. You have that polarity, which then adds in just self-expression and money and status. Ego, if you want to put that in there, right? So that's where it becomes really hard. No, we're never going to reach a point in society or the world where everyone is wearing minimal shoes and is doing barefoot stimulation. It's just not going to happen, right? That's just the reality of what it is. So we just have to work and enlighten those who want to be enlightened to the power of minimal shoes and barefoot stimulation and grounding and reconnecting to your foundation. And then every once in a while, just as an expression of yourself, or if you have an event, wear those shoes, but then don't forget the innate function of your feet.
Yeah. It's the roots run deep, and it's like you said, what you were saying in that explanation, it mirrors very much just our cognitive, like our programmed belief set in form over function, and more is better. And that's not just in terms of our footwear, that's in how we train. Like most people, they train for aesthetics. That's what it's all about. It's about looking the shit instead of actually being able to perform the shit. And it's, I guess it is just a mirror image of just that philosophy runs deep into everything. And probably just from social programming and conditioning from a young age, especially within, like you said, within the Western civilization over to the East, it's different. The way they train is different. The way they live is different. The way they perceive reality is different. And it's interesting how just little things like that can be philosophically connected when you actually look at the root of why we act the way we do. And We buy the things we do, the way we want to be seen, the way we do. And yeah, it's interesting. Just to touch base on what you said then, when you're talking about grinding, like that is something that's very important to myself. And it links back to what you were saying earlier with the two types of skin in the soles of the feet and obviously the palms of the hand. And from an esoteric perspective, from which is the kind of background that I'm also involved in, it's believed that these are the areas in which it's where our main transfer of energy happens. So if you're grounded, obviously you've then got the negative ionic exchange from the earth to, to your feet. And then your hands are there in order for the photoreceptors to pick up light, photons. So what you're doing is getting the photons through your hands, through your eyes, and then getting the electrons through your feet. What's your take on grounding? And also, while we're on this, what's your take on grounding? What's your take on, there's a brand called, I don't know if it's the only brand, but it's the brand that I'm aware of called Earthling, where it's like these little straps that you put into your shoe. And I think it might be like some sort of copper or something where it comes down or to the bottom of the shoe to ground you so you don't have to be barefoot. And yeah, what's your opinion on grounding?
Yeah, I'm a huge supporter of grounding, which you're probably like, thank goodness. If I was like, oh yeah, I don't believe in that,
I'd be like, fuck, that's going to edit it out.
Abort the podcast. So I'm very much into grounding, just again, because of looking at the science, looking at the research of it. There's some really good, valid research. With the grounding, I recommend it to my patients, all of my patients, regardless of age, injury status, whatnot, trying to balance out positive, negative ions with the body, and just really reconnecting to the natural rhythm of the earth, to planet, right? So natural rhythms. Some of my favorite benefits around grounding is the increased skin perfusion. So getting circulation, micro circulation, all the way down to the tips of the toes is really beneficial, especially as we age, or if you are seated for a long time, if you're coming off of a flight, you really have a lot of benefits to increase skin perfusion. When you think microcirculation, it's also the tiny, tiny blood vessels that supply our nerves. So all of the nerves in the feet also get increased perfusion or circulation, microcirculation. You also get decreased inflammation, which is good for everything. And one of my favorite is recycling the circadian rhythm. So grounding when you go into a new time zone is one of the best hacks that you can do. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I do. I don't travel as much as I used to, but I used to 150 days out of the year, I wouldn't even be in the country. So I was very just on a continuous state of switching time zones in, you know, Australia to Asia to Europe to US. And that just kind of, you know, messes with the system. If you can ground and get your body into the rhythm of that country or the city that you're in, then obviously you're going to sleep better, et cetera. So those are really good. Now, some of the things around grounding, and you had mentioned that Earthling strip, mm-hmm. is so shoes. I don't know if it'll work.
I struggle to understand how it would work.
Yeah, depending on the shoe. So you cannot ground through rubber. Mm-hmm. And that's the trickiest thing. So if you have the copper in the shoe, I'm kind of curious. And I want to look at some of the research because I've actually been looking to put a grounding element into the Neboso insoles for a similar reason, is that if people are perpetually in rubberized shoes because of natural state of society, how can we bring that grounding benefit to them? So I'm curious. I'm going to look at that company a little bit more. But in general, you can ground on grass, you can ground on wood, you can ground on concrete, which is amazing in New York where everything is concrete, London, tons of concrete as well. So getting on the sidewalks, you can still ground. The copper, so copper, silver, there's actually quite a few natural elements, metals that can ground. Copper and silver are the two most mainstream ones that the consumers or the listeners would think of. So what I've been looking at and putting in the Nobosso insoles is copper or silver, depending on the cost and the efficacy of one of those materials. The nice thing about copper and silver is not only does it ground you, but it's also antibacterial, so antimicrobial. So that's where you could see an element of, okay, if someone's in their shoes all day, how can we create this environment that is a little bit more not breeding bacteria odor, but also grounding them and balancing the charges while stimulating the skin. I mean, to me, those are all win-wins. Mm-hmm. If someone is not willing to get out of their standard rubberized shoes. To add on that, the one last thing with the grounding is that the minimal shoes that everyone is so in support of, they also don't realize that they're still not getting the grounding. And that's really important to total body balance. You want to constantly be thinking about what is your inflammation state and what is your oxidative stress level. Both of those have to be balanced out or negated or, kind of addressed. Grounding is a great way to do it.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to add as well, because I've heard this from a previous guest I had on the podcast who's very switched on when it comes to grounding. He's like one of the forerunners and voices of the new sort of quantum health movement. And he says that it's important to be aware of where you ground to. If you're grounding in a city, then underneath the wherever it is you're grounding, with the if there's going to be electrical lines and shit like that under, you're then absorbing potentially more EMFs into the system through that act of grounding. So it makes me think then is if there is a, if people are going to start producing more and more of these products that have that give you the ability to ground while wearing shoes, are you then almost, is it almost then counterproductive because you're going to be getting the adverse effects of the non-native EMFs from the electrical wiring underneath the city? Or what do you think? Is that something to be aware of or not?
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100% that the urban environment from a grounding perspective may be, I wouldn't say impossible, but very difficult. That are you kind of like taking one step forward and half a step back? But if you can do something to balance out some of the oxidative stress and inflammation through something in the shoe or grounding through like a grounding blanket versus being on the dirt. So you're using different products. Does that at least combat some of the high EMF load that's in high rises and urban environments and cities and all the, just the tech society that we are in now? I think that there has to be research that needs to be done on that.
Yeah. Another thing I'd like to know as well, what your opinion is. So obviously when you're barefoot and you're in a natural environment, you're then exposed to a lot more bacterial microbial sort of interaction than you would do if when you're in your shoes. So does that play a big part in terms of the immunomodulating factors involved of barefoot, like just barefoot living? Is your exposure to a number of microorganisms that you wouldn't be able to normally, or you wouldn't be exposed to normally?
In a negative way?
No, in a positive way.
Well, yeah. So, you know, I would say maybe, well, actually, let me go back one. So my belief around bacteria and your exposure to bacteria is we live in almost like a hypersterile, trying to achieve a hypersterile environment, which does weaken the immune system. All of the hand sanitizers that people are like continuously putting on their hands is literally the worst thing that you could be doing, especially for starting in children and then going up, because now your immune system is not introduced. Bacteria is your friend. You've probably had guests on your shows that speak about bacteria and how they're our friend. And there's many different types and like millions of bacteria that's on our skin now, but they're your friend and they help you. So, you know, yes, you're exposed to bacteria on the bottom of the feet when you do barefoot movement, maybe barefoot lifestyle. Is it benefiting you? I would say it's just part of the natural exposure to your environment. Yes, some people could say that you're going to get too much bacteria or the wrong kind of bacteria, and then you could get an infection. But the skin on the bottom of the foot is thicker for a reason.
Yeah.
That it's, you have to have a break in the skin for bacteria, bad bacteria, to enter the body. If you're walking around in normal barefoot, maybe you're not even outside barefoot, but barefoot at home, maybe you work out barefoot, and you kind of, you know, do barefoot from that perspective, the chances of you cutting yourself on something are very minimal. And if you do, just clean the area and cover it if you want. Don't go barefoot until you get a little bit of a closure, and then you're good, right? Like, it's, it doesn't mean, you know, the next Armageddon is going to happen and you have to, like, you know, oh my God, this is happening. So I do think that there is a benefit to being exposed to the micro environment that we live in and appreciating it from our external environment. Obviously, gut biome, I know you spoke about that. Huge, huge, huge. Have to have that as well. One thing that I will add about being barefoot and people's concerns is plantar warts and fungus.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of going in the other direction of the negative side, right?
Yeah.
People will be scared or concerned about being barefoot around other people being barefoot because they think they're going to get athlete's foot or a plantar wart. Now, both of those, fungus and plantar warts, are viruses. So it's the HPV virus, which HPV is like a sexually transmitted disease as well, but it's cold sores, plantar warts, they're HPV. Both the virus and the fungus like more dark, moist, wet environments. So you could say if you shower at the gym, and then you get exposed to the fungus and the bacteria, and then you go into your socks and your shoes, and now you're in them for hours and hours, and it's dark and it's sweaty. That's going to perpetuate the breeding of fungus virus versus maybe you shower and you get exposed to it, and then now you go into minimal shoes, barefoot shoes, maybe sandals, and then you're barefoot again and your feet are dry. So the chances of getting barefoot walking around the gym floor, very, very low. Last thing that I'll add to it is that there's an immune sensitivity to both of those. So both you and I could walk across the same area, be exposed to the same fungus and virus. You might get the plantar warts or the athlete's foot. I don't, because you happen to have a slight immune sensitivity to it where I don't.
Yeah, that's really where I was coming from as well. I think it's important to be exposed to these different species of bacteria. Just in general, like what you said, then we're in a hypersensitized society that's so focused on hygiene. And one of the things that I'm really into is like where did that stem from? And basically, like if you look into ancient Greece and their sort of philosophy on health, they're, you could break down their healthcare with which they looked at through the gods. Like that's how they projected everything, was all the forces that help, that interact with us on a daily life, was through the gods. And there was two gods. There was Asclepius, which was the god of medicine. And there was, which kind of acted as like a reaction-based solution, kind of medical perspective, in that he would create like elixirs and potions in order to help people if there was an illness that was present. And then his daughter was Aia, and Aia was kind of like the goddess of overarching health, in terms of she was like the compendium of knowledge of sound nutrition, of preventive measures. And what's happened, and you can go very deep into this in terms of the balance of the masculine and the feminine, and how we've really kind of pushed away that feminine energy or that feminine perspective of that combined medical system. And as the male side has begun to overpower it, now we only look at Aia as what we know today as hygiene. That's where it comes from. And we only think of hygiene now in terms of cleanliness, and everything has to be sterile and all of this shit that dates back again to like Louis Pasteur. And when we're looking at the, that we just get ill because we catch, like we're just unlucky that we just caught the germ, we caught the bacteria. And I think we're just completely off. I think all of this is needed. I think it's, we need exposure to these different forms of bacteria, to these different germs. We need to have it interact with our body, with the internal body as well, the internal realm. And then we, as well, there's other factors involved. Like you said, like you might grow the fungi or the infection by being in contact with something, and I might not. Like there's so many environmental factors and internal factors. It could be diet, it can be lifestyle, it could be your stress levels, it could be the foods that you eat, if they've got pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, insecticides, all everything like that. It all has an effect on us. And yeah, I've just appreciated just what you said then. I think that was a great answer for what I was asking for. And it's I'm just keeping the track of the time as well, Emily. Have you got a few more minutes?
I do. Yes.
Yeah. Minutes. It's a few more minutes that's really kind of warrants like a fucking long answer, but I kind of just want like a kind of like a brief explanation if you could, because I know that the whole barefoot thing is again only the tip of the iceberg with what you're about. And one of the things that I did want to ask you about was all to do with like movement, the fascia, the vestibular system, because I know that everything is connected. And could you just give like a breakdown in the importance of the fascia system? Like I know this is completely off kind of a tangent compared to everything that's been going on in the previous hour, but I really did want to ask you this while I've still got hold of you about the importance of the fascia system and what it actually is about compared to what people, because people are just clueless. People don't really know about the fascia and they don't understand what it is and the effects it has on everything, like everything in the body.
Yeah. So this is definitely longer than
a few minutes.
That's okay. So fascia, I would say some of the listeners may think of fascia or be familiar with fascia because of foam rolling, maybe, if any of the listeners work out. So you're familiar with foam rolling, that links to fascia. Fascia is a connective tissue web that surrounds every one of our bones, muscles. It truly interconnects one part of the body to another part of the body. You can connect your feet to your shoulder blade, to your hand, to the top of your head, to the tongue. So it's just almost the internal soft tissue skeleton. Now, this fascia, from a layperson perspective of how you can think of it, is when you get meat, like a steak or chicken or something, and you kind of open it, and there's the almost like the tissue paper thin tissue, right? Or like a saran wrap is how I think of it. So when I explain it to my patients, I say it's like a saran wrap that, you know, hugs every bone in the body, which blends into the tendons, which blends into the muscles, which blends into the ligaments. Everything is just connected. Now this spider web of connective tissue, yes, it is mechanically connecting the body, which means that if I move my ankle or I flex my toes up, now I tighten that. And if I lean my body forward, technically I just tightened and bring my chin to my chest and lean forward. My whole back line just became tight. Like I just pulled all of that tissue, right? So you could just kind of think of that mechanically of I move one, it tightens another joint. Yeah. Again, I look at it sensory because everything that moves and coordinates and stimulates the human body for human movement is sensory connected. So your fascia web, the connective tissue web, has over 100 million sensory nerves, over 100 million nerves, which means the way that I look at it is a extension of the brain. So it is like a second brain in your body, and its purpose, not just to connect the body, but its purpose is to seek sensory information. Every time I move, if I'm moving my elbow, there's fascia surrounding my elbow. So now I just stretched it. So my elbow knows that it's bent. Whoop, I stretched it another way. Now my elbow knows it's straight and it knows the rate at which I bend it, right? Mm-hmm. Or if I am holding a weight and I bend, it knows that information as well. So it's seeking information in that way, but it's also seeking vibration. It has vibration receptors within our fascial web. There are stretch receptors in our fascial web. So you can feed into all of that stimulation by understanding how connected it is. Now that is fascia from more of a movement perspective. I want to add in the other side that I find really fascinating, which is not exteroceptive. We mentioned that word earlier.
Interoceptive.
Is interoceptive, yes. Yeah. So interoceptors are sensory nerves that have to do with your internal state. Exteroceptors are sensory nerves that have to do with the external world, mm-hmm. right? So don't kick the table, right? Whatever it is, you know, the coordination of external environment. I'm touching the wall versus interoceptors is, I have butterflies in my stomach, right? I feel like my heart is a little kind of pumping a little bit faster, like a palpitation. That's an internal environment sensation that we are able to sense through our fascial web, through interoceptors, and then interoception and our sensation of our internal state then tells the brain if we are balanced or not balanced. Like, are we good to go, or do we need to protect ourselves? So that links to even deeper neurostimulation and neurodrivers that link to emotion and your state of safety or not safety. Because at the end of the day, before movement, the priority of your nervous system is survival, meaning do I feel safe or do I feel threatened? If you feel threatened, your nervous system is going to respond in unconscious ways that you won't, they're happening before you even know they're happening. Right? You're starting to sweat before you even know you're sweating, right? Mm-hmm. Your heart rate is elevating before, your pupils dilate or they vasoconstrict before you even realize it. Those are things that are not under your control that are linked to survival and your internal perception of safe or not safe. All of that I actually build into my practice. And I build it into my practice because I deal a lot with chronic pain. So chronic pain, regardless of whatever the pain is, it could be chronic plantar fasciitis, even though I deal with more chronic nerve pain with no known cause, and that's very frustrating to a patient, that they start to have an emotional response to that pain. Or someone who has knee arthritis could have an emotional response to the knee arthritis because it doesn't let them play their favorite sport anymore because they're limited. So now they have a deeper emotional connection to that knee pain, which actually perpetuates the knee pain, and it keeps them almost stuck in the knee pain. They're identified by the knee pain. Mm-hmm. When you get a patient that's like that and it switches their relationship to that situation and they become identified by it, it makes the practitioner's ability to help them get out of pain very difficult. It now becomes more of a psychological, psychosomatic issue that you have to address, which is very complex. That takes more than a couple minutes to explain. But that's honestly how I look at the fascial system, is movement, sensory, but also interoceptive emotion, safety, survival. It's the blend and the marriage of both of those that makes the human so fucking fascinating, because we're not just bones and joints moving and, you know, trying to lose some weight and, you know, tighten up and get a six pack. That's not what we are. We are much more complex beings and structures that are dictated by deep, heavy emotional beliefs that are ingrained in utero before we're even born. And I'm going to make it just totally way more complicated, but that's really where it starts. That's how we have to look at our patients. Honestly, that's my next kind of like push into what I want to do with my life outside of just barefoot, is to change the way that doctors are looking at movement, orthopedic, musculoskeletal pain and imbalances as just bones and joints. We have to bring the emotional being into it, or that biopsychosocial energy into every single one of those patients.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the exact, like, I use this analogy a lot, in that the common phrase that you hear around the gym is like, bro, you skip leg day. Like, you're only training half your body. Like, all you do is just train upper body, you fuck off the lower body, and that's what it is. But on a much grander scale, it's like, you can look at it from this analogy, is that we only train half our being. And like you said earlier, that everything at its core is a vibration. We are material and non-material in essence. And if you're only training your physical body and everything that is included within that, the perception of what's physical, then you're only training half of the picture, half of the coin. And it's not so much about training the physical and then, or just training the non-physical. It's the knowledge and embodying of the fact that we are the totality of the coin itself. And it's about training both. It's about, first of all, understanding both, and understanding about how these subtle energies affect us on a cellular level, and then how this begins to work up through the different levels of organizations and in the body. And I think, that's great that you're onto that sort of level, and you're going to be pushing that within your own field, because it's important. And for so long, we have been, essentially looking through one eye instead of having another eye on everything else that's happening. And it's just it's a fault within our scientific paradigm. It's very reductionistic, very, very Newtonian in the way that we look at things. And now with the increased interest within the quantum sciences, within the non-material, it's not going to be too long before that's then integrated into the health sciences. And then I think we're going to start to see some big shifts in how we deal with clients, how we deal with patients, and everything around that line. And it's interesting just to talk with people that are on that forefront of understanding that connection. And like you said, everything's connected. Like, everything, the human body, it's like, it's an holistic, like, the way that I've got loads of different philosophies on what the human body is and what it's capable of, going deep into the spiritual level. But without going into that, it's fascinating. You don't need to be fucking balls deep into all the esoteric shit like I am, just to have like a mild inkling of like, fuck, there's more to us than meets the eye. There really is. And we've just lost our ability to perceive that at this moment in time. But through connecting, like you said, by doing exercises, connecting back to the ground, to nature, we begin to open our eyes a little bit to what we're truly about. And I think that's, I think it's great. And I don't want to keep you for any longer than you need to be, Emily. And I just want to say a massive thank you again for coming on. Like, it really was great talking to you. I would love to be able to have a few more like hours of your time, where maybe we could do a few other episodes in the future where we can go in deep on some of the other stuff. But
I love that.
Yeah, for sure. So for everyone that's been listening and they've really enjoyed what you're about, again, you've only kind of like presented the tip of the iceberg. I know that you go so much deeper than this, but still, it's great what you said. For everyone that's enjoyed it, like, whereabouts can they find more of you? Have you got like your website, your social media handles? You got any events coming up that anyone within the local area might be interested in coming to? And let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on all the different social platforms. I'd say primarily Instagram and Facebook. My name, if you just search it in there, it'll pull it up. Dr. Emily Splickle. You might kind of tie it into some show notes possibly.
Yeah, I'll do all that as well.
Okay, great. And then my education company, which would be absolutely explored by anyone. It's not just for professionals. YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, it's EBFA Global, or Evidence-Based Fitness Academy. And then the textured insole company is Naboso, N-A-B-O-S-O Technology. I have several books that I've written. Barefootstrong.com is one of my websites, EBFAGlobal.com. My practice is my name, DrEmilySplickle.com. You could probably just Google my name and get lots of fun stuff. Dr. Emily Splickle Barefoot, and you'll get a slew of links to articles, blogs, videos, my companies, how I treat patients. I'm a very big believer in education. That's what I believe my calling is education. So I have a lot of free content that is out there to start informing others on just really how I look at movement and longevity in general. I do Facebook Lives all the time, and all of those websites link to one of my email addresses. So if someone has a question, either hit me up on social media or on one of the email addresses that come up.
Cool. All right, exciting then. In which case, guys, hopefully you've enjoyed it. It's been a I really did enjoy this one, Emily. I think this was great. There was a lot of the stuff that had good foundation was laid, and it's definitely given people a taster that they can then go and search for more on you if they're interested in sort of really delving deep into this one, because it is a deep rabbit hole to go down. And as with everything, guys, everything's connected. You're going to learn more and more about that as the podcast series continues. And yeah, hopefully you've enjoyed this one. So we're calling this one a night for episode 34. Whew, 34, fuck. All right, guys, let's tie this one up. So episode 34, cool, rolling out. Stay woke as fuck. I'll catch you next time.